Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagen. I'm working
in... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's True Straight Up, the Chuck and Julie Show with Chuck Bonneville and Julie Hayden, brought to you by
AmericasCitizenPress.com, a great website for Colorado and the nation's conservative voice, along with Julie McCallan and Denver Cynogenics.
Doing a great job keeping me alive.
That's right, doing a great job keeping Chuck alive and healthy and improving his golf swing. Hey, coming up at 3:30, we're going to have Dick Wadhams, former Colorado Republican Party chairperson.
Should be fun.
Yeah, should be feisty. I think that we can rest assured it will be robust. Lot to talk about today. I was kind of teasing it, you know, where have we been, where are we now, and where are we going? The future of the not only the Colorado Republican Party, but the Republican Party in general. A lot of stuff happening, again, that gives me hope. We'll get into the whole election thing later. That does not give me hope, but at least we're aware of it now. But Chuck, you know, I want to play, I think we could just sort of launch out playing an interesting sound bite. So today, Kevin McCarthy, who, as you know, was not initially a stalwart Trump supporter at the very end there, but went down to Florida and they made up, apparently, versus Liz Cheney, the Wyoming representative, who let's say did not make up with Trump.
And nor is Trump. She's not trying to make up with Trump, and Trump's not trying to make up with her. You know, the always shifty Pence, you know, attacks Trump and then says he's not attacking Trump. And then
they get along fine. He was saying they talk
every day.
He was just kidding, goofing around. You know me on that whole insurrection stuff.
You gotta have a sense of humor, you know. You gotta have a sense of humor.
Now, and notably, all of that information about how great they're getting along is coming from Pence's people, not Trump's people. Nikki Haley, having trashed Trump, immediately groveled and humiliated herself by asking to come down to talk to him in Florida. And he said,
just to work things out.
After she trashed him. But Liz Cheney, interestingly enough, is doubling down. So, but this was at a news conference today. And I want you to pay attention to the way the two of them walk off the stage at the very end. So, Thomas, if we could play the McCarthy-Cheney soundbite, please.
Yes, he should.
That's up to CPAC. I've been clear in my views about President Trump and the extent to which following January 6th, I don't believe that he should be playing a role in the future of the party for the country.
On that high note, thank you all very much.
Exit left, exit right. So they were asked, should Trump be speaking at CPAC? And Kevin McCarthy said, yes.
Why?
And Liz Cheney said, no, you should not.
No part in the party.
No part of it. So you got to wonder what the heck is going on with Liz Cheney. And here for the first half, until we get Dick Wadhams, we'll open it up for phone calls and comments. 888-627-6008 is the number. 888-627-6008. If you're on Zoom and you want to comment too, go ahead and just bring your camera up and unmute yourself. And as always, just remember one at a time. I think that, you know, let me ask you, Chuck, to channel your inner Cheney. I mean, Liz Cheney was censored in Wyoming. People made it clear like only 13% of them would vote for her. 91% would vote for Donald Trump. The people in Wyoming have made it clear they're unhappy. They made it clear she's not speaking for them. They don't like what she's saying. Like a million people have jumped into primary her. Kevin McCarthy at least got the memo, and so did Pence. Yeah, and so did Nikki Haley, whether they personally like Trump or not, and whether they personally wish that he would just play golf all the time. They clearly have gotten the message that the poll polls indicate Trump is by far considered to be the leader of the party by the Republican base. The, like, you know, 77%, most of whom say they've, even Mitt Romney is saying he thinks that he would easily win the primary in 2024 if it comes to that. So they've acknowledged that even if they don't like Trump, I submit because he's trying to clean the swamp, the voters love Trump and they consider him to be the leader of the Republican Party. Trump himself has indicated he's happy to stay in that role. So what's going on? What's with Liz
Same
Cheney?
With Mitch McConnell. It's a way of getting an enormous amount of money behind her. She goes out front. She never wanted to be a stinking representative. She at least wanted to be a senator until Wyoming wouldn't have her for that. And things change. And now she's got millions of dollars behind her. All the Never Trump money. You can't go to
Lincoln Project
anymore. So she can just rake in the money, and with money you can make influence, make friends among party members. I mean, look at the secret vote. She overwhelmingly won that easily, even though voters hate her. Fellow representatives don't.
In Congress, yes.
So it's maybe a good move.
Well, like Mitch McConnell, I think that gets back to something you always have to understand about the swamp. And the swamp cares about two things, power and money. And Liz Cheney sees this as a way.
Sex, too. But
they don't talk about that as much. No. But power and money, and that's what Mitch McConnell wants. Mitch McConnell doesn't really care whether he wins the Senate or not. In fact, as we've talked about before, it's almost easier for him if he doesn't. He just wants to be able to rake in the money and wield the power. Liz Cheney is used it the same way. The Lincoln Project showed that there were, until everyone got arrested for sexual harassment and pedophilia, and now are being investigated for stealing money.
That's all a confirmed conspiracy theory you should pay attention to.
Right, yeah, exactly. Sorry.
Oh, no, I think there are pedophiles in major positions. Huh?
Go figure.
No,
yeah, we won't even go into the new Hunter Biden stuff coming out today.
Oh, yeah.
What a weird family, I'm just going to say.
What a fun family.
Fun family.
More fun family.
We won't even go. The poor grandchildren are probably stuck at Camp David because it's safe for them.
Safe,
but at least there aren't any
adults. Uncle Hunter.
Yeah, no adults roaming around naked or smoking crack. But anyway, we digress. One of the things I think that is going to happen, though, is I think Liz Cheney is going to be smacked down. Trump, I think, clearly.
What do you mean by smacked down?
I think that she might get all the money, but I don't think she's going to win very much. I think Trump has made it clear.
Win what?
I mean, any primaries that she's going to endorse. If
you
put
up
Liz
Cheney, that millions of dollars in for no reason, they will water down any opposition. Anybody who looks like they may be thing, they will, you know, do a Kavanaugh on, destroy him. And while Liz Cheney will get less than 50% of the vote, she might, you know,
win. I mean, if she's trying to take control of the so-called other part of the Republican Party, I don't think she's going to be very successful at that. Because you've got to keep in mind, everybody who talks about the split in the Republican Party, there really is not a split. Or if there is, it's 90-10, right? All of the polls show, and just talk to people, 90% of the Republican voters support the Make America Great Again, Keep America Great agenda and Donald Trump. Only these 10% swamp creatures who are overtly swamp creatures, they don't even pretend anymore. They're the only ones who don't like it. So
at one time, George W. Bush had a 90% approval rating. 90%.
After
the Gulf War, not Gulf War, but the second Gulf War. He was very, things change. And as far as she's concerned, I'll make lots of money.
Could be, you're right.
And the hell with all
What's
the
that old story about the king tells the guy he has to teach the horse to talk, and he gives him 3 days, and the guy's like, okay, and he goes, who knows, or whatever. A lot can happen in the next few days. A king may die, I might die, or the horse might learn to talk. So I guess there's something there. But speaking of that, one of the things, though, that annoys me even more about Liz Cheney is she is now going after Trump voters. She's going after, again, this conspiracy theory debunked, but that doesn't stop the mainstream media from talking about it, that it was all Trump supporters who attacked the Capitol and were trying to overthrow the government. Oh my God.
Armed insurrection.
She's calling for a 9/11 type commission to study that and to get to the bottom and to prosecute anybody who was there. But Steve Bannon, we've got a couple of sound bites here. Steve Bannon kind of turned the tables on her. He said, hey, 9/11 commission, great idea.
Let's do a 9/11 commission on the 9/11
commission. Which was totally corrupt. If you followed our show, you know that we talked a lot about what was it, the 28, is that the 28 pages? Is that the report missing, that came out? Yeah. The redacted portion of the pages that talk about the Saudi government involvement and the Bushes and Dick Cheney, the vice president. I mean, all of that. So Steve Bannon kind of takes it to her. So if we could play the Steve Bannon soundbite number one, talking about Liz Cheney and her dad, and maybe we do need a 9/11 commission.
It's a message. This is a defiant throwdown using the apparatus of the Reagan Library, right? To put forward more Cheney lies and the implications. Let's get rid of the rights of process. Hey, let's get rid of the war. I tell you what, in the new Republican Party, we're starting, let's get rid of the war criminals first. That would be your family. Let's get rid of the war criminals.
Yeah, he's calling her dad a war criminal. And in the first one, but he kind of got over this. The next one, we'll play that here in a second. He talks about some of the things that Dick Cheney did and that got us into the war.
Right, lying about the weapons of mass destruction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And all of the reports. So he's saying, okay, yeah, a 9/11 commission. You want to get to the bottom of something that's really a problem. Well, let's take a look at that. Not get so wound up about people going to the Capitol, whatever you want to call it. They weren't
walking
armed.
No evidence
that anyone was harmed. No evidence. Well, the only person who was killed.
Was killed, but
by the police.
By the police.
Right.
And other people died in the crowd for, you know, medical reasons, just like somebody dies in the Super Bowl.
Well, then the police officer we now know had died unrelated to the whole thing. But if you listen to the Liz Cheney who's touting the total progressive line, there was all these Trump supporters. That's why we have to have armed guards and we have to have the fence around the state,
around
the Capitol.
Yeah.
So if we could play the Steve Bannon bite number two, please, Thomas.
Frank Vetti, of your father, who I consider a war criminal. And the reason I consider a war criminal, he lied. He lied and misrepresented the intelligence. Everybody understands that now, right? We spent trillions of dollars over there, countless American lives, either killed in combat in Iraq, right? After the 9/11 commission, you guys, he used it. This phony intelligence to go into Iraq, trillions of dollars, we're still there, right? Another genius move. I want to go back to the 9/11 commission. I want to get to the bottom of actually what happened. And let's get all the pages unredacted, not just the pages that should have been in the commission report. Let's get all the background information. Let's get up online. Let's get all, and then let's see who was involved and who knew about it. I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, but there are no coincidences. Let's fully vet the Saudis. You've got the families are still in lawsuits, and the guys are trying to, the Saudis and the royal family are trying to dodge.
Yeah, and with the help of whom? Don't forget our favorite law firm here in Denver, the Brownstein Law Firm, representing the families? No, representing the Saudis. So a lot of stuff to look into there. I think you got to ask yourself always, so why are they pushing it so much? Not just Liz Cheney, the progressives. And I submit it's because they want to use everything they can. And we'll get into the election here in a second, but to keep all the rest of us silent. They want to go ahead and say, okay, if you were in any way connected with that,
if you're one of the 500,000 people who went there to protest your government, that's no longer allowed. It was great when Martin Luther King did it. That's different.
It's great when Antifa did it
this
summer.
Antifa did it. Oh, yeah, it did.
And Merrick Garland, our new AG,
apparently.
BLM Plaza,
right in Washington,
if you do it at night, I guess it's okay.
Do a little looting along the way.
Right, no problem.
Some good old-fashioned looting.
But they have to do that because they want to turn us into criminals. There's a congressional hearing going on as we speak where they are talking about pressuring the FCC, which actually doesn't even control it, so I don't know why they're pressuring them, but wanted to pressure the cable companies to not carry essentially conservative organizations, Fox, Mac, Newsmax.
But they are big on First Amendment and diversity and tolerance and everything.
Not anymore. I don't think, you know what, Chuck?
They never were, Julie.
I don't think they even pretend anymore.
No, they don't.
They're not even
pretending
anymore.
That's because they're on
top.
When they're on the bottom, they pretended and pretty well. And we all go, oh, okay.
Well, and why do they do that? Because one of the ways you keep people compliant is you say, we're going to launch a freaking FBI investigation into you because you're saying you don't think that it was just Trump supporters at the mob scene at the Capitol. I mean, we know for a fact that two of the people who received the most publicity were Antifa people posing as Trump supporters.
Well, let me read you. This is from Rush Limbaugh in late October, and I haven't got the soundbite from it yet. I have to go through all the things to do it. But Russ is talking about a person who joined him. He said, I got to admit, when I first heard you, being Rush, say that the left and the Democrats ultimately want to do away with elections, I thought you were going insane. I thought you were mad. I thought that is all has finally gotten to you. Well, it has some years ago now when I first advanced the theory. But what do you see in it now, in Russian? They're doing it in front of our faces. They really are. They are attempting to win election without broad public support. That's what they're trying to do. Just another way of phasing what they're doing. How do you win elections without a broad public support? You cheat. And that's what they do.
Well, and I think, and that's the thing, and I guess we could sort of segue because I wanted to talk about this. There was a great column in the AM Greatness today by Michael Anton, I think his name was, where he talked about this. And it goes back to, why is it, it's not so much even that they're calling us crazy. It's not so much that they're saying, oh, you guys don't know what you're talking about. We have to be silenced. We have to concede that there was no election fraud, that there were no questions at all about the election. I mean, if you try to post something about the election saying, Trump and win, YouTube, they take it down. It disappears from Facebook. It disappears from Twitter. And again, now they're trying to make it disappear. They're trying to make the networks and the shows disappear altogether. Why, you ask yourself, if they won, why are they so doubled down on it? And I think it's because they're going to keep doing it. And they want to quash and squash any attempt to argue. This, in this column, they point out a few things. The guy is saying, look, I'm not.
Here's with Andrew Sullivan, who's gay, used to be a conservative, then decided he wasn't. And he constantly was trying to make him
say it was a fair election. And he said, you know, look, there are a lot of fishy things. And I'm just going to run through them because, again, we got to remember one of the things I think they do when they change history, you think back and you're like, what? Were there any fishy things in that 2020 election? Oh. And everyone says, no. And you're like, okay, I guess I just must misremember it. Well, we're not misremembering. He points out that the 2020 election came down to a narrower margin than the 2016 election. Fewer than 43,000 votes decided that in just three states. So he goes through things and he says, I don't know, but they're just fishy sounding. Counting shutdowns in five states in which one candidate was ahead, only to lose when the counting resumed, found tranches of ballots going overwhelmingly, sometimes exclusively, to Joe Biden.
Sworn affidavits alleging the backdating of ballots.
Historically low rejection rates, as in orders of magnitude lower, of mail-in ballots being rejected. Essentially, he says, suggesting that at least it's possible that obviously invalid ballots were being accepted as genuine. Now, we know that's true because in a lot of places, they said, we're not verifying the signatures. We're not even checking the signatures. Why would they not want to do that? He goes on to say mail-in and absentee ballots appearing without creases, raising the question of how they got into the envelopes that are required for them to be mailed into.
Thousands of ballots all marked for one presidential candidate without a single choice mark for any other down ballot candidate, and all of those ballots being for Biden.
Right.
None of those ballots were Trump ballots.
And again, the absolute refusal to conduct signature audits to just make it seem like, hey, you know, your basic kind of audit. And then he talks about other statistical and historical anomalies too numerous to mention here. Now I'm going to throw in the Dominion lawsuits. The Dominion voting company, City, Powell, Linwood raised questions about that. I think that's putting it mildly. And how does Dominion respond?
Lawsuits.
With billions of dollars worth of lawsuits.
Not justifying thing, not refuting.
No, just saying it's libel. Just saying it's libel. And Alan Dershowitz pointed out, and I think this is true, that, for instance, one against Mike Lindell, they said he can't win a libel suit against Mike Lindell.
You can in Democratic courts.
Well, in a Democratic court, but that's a good point. But they said, you know, look, hey, they just want to shut people up. If you've got the threat, and you can see it in media operations around the country and even here in Denver, the potential threat of a lawsuit, which they used to say, bring it. Right. Randy Corcoran still does say, bring it.
Right.
Now they don't want to do that. They don't want to fight. I mean, how could they, to show libel? And I want to ask you a question about this. To show libel, they have to show that Mike Lindell maliciously, knowingly and intentionally spread lies about them.
Or a reckless disregard, highly reckless.
Right.
Disregard.
For the truth. Now, we already know that's not true. But let me ask you this. If you file a libel lawsuit and the person keeps repeating the claims, can that come back to bite them? And the reason I ask it is I think that the main reason they're doing it is, again, they're not ever going to go to court. There's never going to be any hearing. They just want to shut people up.
Well, sure, you can bring it anytime you want to.
No, but what I mean would be, if does it hurt Mike Lindell to continue repeating those claims once a lawsuit has been filed?
Doesn't help, but, you know, they're trying to shut you up, so
right.
Maybe you don't.
So the question is why is it? I mean, what this guy points out, these things we know happened. Now, you could argue, we don't know what the results were. We don't know, would it have made any difference? But the very fact that we are not allowed, if I were to put that in the title of our show, YouTube and Facebook and Twitter would ban it. Not only would they ban it, they would ban us from being on the air for at least a week and maybe longer. Yes, okay. Yes. How are they going to carry the president's CPAC speech? They're not going to. They've already taken down when the president goes on Newsmax and talks about the election, they take that. They, being the big tech giants, take that down.
But you live in a democracy, and you know, and that First Amendment really only applies to the government. So the fact that big tech is really just hand and foot with the government. Oh, that's okay then. That's
right. Well, I'm just saying, now why is big tech there? Look what they're doing in Australia, right?
Right.
Where Australia was saying, hey, look, Facebook and Google, you're making a ton of money redistributing the work and the content of the work from journalistic organizations, newspapers, TV stations that are struggling. Why don't you pay them? I mean, that's what happens with cable, right? If cable pays the Nuggets and the Nuggets, I mean, they have agreements there, right, where they pay each other.
I hope Australia, and there's some indication they're backing that, but I hope they don't. I hope other countries start.
Well, no, Facebook backed down. So what Facebook did, though, they responded by killing all of the local news content on Facebook.
Good.
And Google was doing that, too. They were hiding it in the searches. Now, they backed down, but that's what they don't want. They don't want to have to pay for that stuff. So they have the politicians in their pocket because they don't, you know, they were mentioning that other countries in Europe are looking at it, considering similar laws. They can handle it maybe if Australia and Scotland say do it, but they don't
Scotland
want.
Scotland wouldn't.
But they don't want the United States. So that's why the big tech, they're just protecting, they're billionaires already, but you can never be, I guess, too big of a billionaire.
Right.
They're just protecting that. So they don't want anyone, right? They call it misinformation, and they want to make misinformation a terrorist act.
Right.
What the heck is Liz Cheney talking about white supremacists? She says, we need to deny that the Republican Party is white supremacist. Right. No one thinks it is. Even they don't think it is.
Right.
No one thinks it is, Liz Cheney. The Buffalo Head guy and that Antifa guy who got paid $70,000 for his video, no one thinks that they're white supremacists. You're just repeating the lie.
Lies.
And to deny it, it'd be like, sort of saying you need to deny.
We have to convince the American public that we're all not pedophiles. That'd be a good idea.
Right, and they're all not war criminals. It's like, just stop it. But again, they're trying to force us to be quiet because they have, I suspect, a lot of plans for us. I think, Chuck, you take a look at the COVID thing. That was part of their playbook, right? So there's a crisis that comes up. People are scared. People are worried. We have to be in a lockdown for 14 days, they said, 14 days to flatten the curve. Okay, it's going on a year, right? It's going on a year, and Jared Polis still has emergency powers. Restaurants still are closed. Kids are still out of school, right? The vaccine, they're talking about making you prove that you took it before you can go on a flight. I mean, all kinds of civil liberties just completely annihilated under the guise of flatten the curve in 14 days. And here's the
remember
thing.
That? Remember just
14 days.
We all went, oh, that'd be okay.
Right,
14 days.
Right.
Yeah.
So you might be tempted to say, okay, you know what? I don't want to get fired from my job. So I'm not going to go to the next pro-Trump rally. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get arrested by the FBI. So I'm just not going to go there. I'm not going to mention it. I'm not going to call into a show. I'm not going to retweet something. I'm just not.
I'll be just a nice surf.
Yeah. You can't do it, guys. We just can't do it because a year from now, I mean, who knew a year from now what we'd be locked down under COVID? And get this, thank God Joe Biden has miraculously cured COVID. Somebody was tweeting today, the new cases are down 77%.
Amazing.
But can we reopen the economy?
No,
oh, no.
No,
now we have to wear one, two, or three masks.
Mask really helps.
Yeah. I mean, but again, you think, oh, they would never make us do that. I'm sorry. Have you tried going someplace without wearing your mask? I mean, they can, they are, and they will continue doing it. And that's why they have to crack down. That is their plan. Okay. It's a tactic. They have to crack down so hard on anyone who questions the election. Not only on you questioning it, you must concede that you are wrong. You must say, no, it was totally legit. I was wrong. Please forgive me for having any questions. And thank God for Donald Trump, who just keeps saying, nope. Nope. He's going to raise it again in CPAC, they say. Okay, we got a bunch of questions. This is from Sandra. And I bet anybody who questions the voting are also being threatened. Exactly. Look what they did to Trump's attorneys. And then she says, do the spoliation letters work from the lawsuits filed by the plaintiff? Can Dominion destroy documents out without repercussions? Sure they can. Sure. I mean, unless...
The court might.
Well, unless they've already, somebody's filed a motion to tell them to not, right? Yeah, I got to tell you, when I was at the TV station, if there was any thought that a lawsuit might be coming, you know, you were told, get rid of your notes and the video, get rid of the raw videotape.
Right.
Not that anybody did anything wrong, but they just didn't want to, you know, because they knew once the letter came, then you couldn't do that.
Right. Now, do we have, has Dick joined us yet on Zoom? If not, maybe somebody could give him a call, and because I really want to get him on, and I don't want to, because I talked to him a little while ago, he's ready to go. And sometimes getting all that Zoom stuff
can be confusing. So maybe, Thomas, you have the backup number if you maybe want to give him a call. I mean, this is from Dr. Donna. Believe that, and I have some land in Florida that I can sell you. A bit soggy, but who's looking at this? Right, and this is from Sandra, too. Now we have to wear masks even after we get the shot. Why is that? Right? So now they announce that Johnson & Johnson has another vaccine that we have to get. So why do we have to keep wearing the mask? Why can't the kids be in school?
Since you can't give anybody COVID if you've taken the thing, and you can't get COVID, the mask does what for you?
Right. And again, it's not about the mask. It's really not even about the election. It is about finding ways to control us and finding ways, and they want to punish you if you spread what they call misinformation. You might call it accurate information. You might call it questions, and it might be misinformation, right? Look at all the talk about UFOs or things like that, crazy stuff that goes out there that may or may not be true, but you don't get banned from Facebook for posting. I could post a picture right now saying, this is a UFO in our backyard, and have a picture of Chuck, like in a helmet, coming in and saying, take me to your leader. And I could say an alien landed in my backyard. They wouldn't stop that.
No, I could
post that all over the place.
Happy.
So they don't really worry about misinformation. What they worry about is you talking about information they don't like. And again, what's so scary about that is why? Why are they so hell-bent on silencing anyone who questions them? And that is because that's part of their plan, and this is just the beginning of their plan. They have won now. It's, as Rush Limbaugh said, elections are pesky. You have to have good ideas when you have elections. And why bother with ideas? Why bother with candidates who may have, you know, who have to campaign and things like that? If you can just go in and conduct the election in such a way that you make sure that you win, and then silence anybody, and not just silence them, remove their ability to talk in a platform.
I will be taking a second off to check in with our next guest, because it's not, you know, our caller,
okay,
our producer did, but he wouldn't recognize the numbers. So.
Okay, well, let me go. Here he is. He's here.
Okay.
But that's before we get Dick up. Let's go ahead and grab Jacob from Denver. Hey, Jacob, thank you for joining us.
Talk about holding up information outside the Gateway Pundit. Did you see anything about Matt Crane and his wife working for
Bill? Yes.
No. What we're talking about there, folks, is Matt Crane, who was the clerk and recorder for Arapahoe County, Republican clerk and recorder, has been very busy refuting the Gateway Pundit stories and complaining about them, about the Dominion voting systems. However, coincidentally, his wife works for them. Yeah, Jacob.
For over a decade. And the Secretary of State was fine destroying the proposal for Derek.
Randy Corcoran has talked about it. I'll give him that.
All right. Well, let's go next to our guest.
Jacob, we're going to let you go because you've got Dick up.
Go ahead.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Dick. Great to see you.
If you want to go ahead and unmute your microphone, Dick.
Yeah, there we go.
All right.
Well, let me give an intro to this. Julie can tell you the people I enjoy having on most are bright, intelligent people who I respect but disagree with. Sometimes vehemently. That's my favorite one. If I have somebody who just agrees exactly with me, I might as well give a monologue. I mean, what's the point? Just give a monologue.
Not that I'd ever do that.
And the other thing Julie doesn't understand is kind of my prep school and my rugby background. I mean, rugby, you go out there for 90 minutes trying to kill the other guy, and the minute the game is over, boom, you're down in a bar drinking together and having fun. So we've got Dick Wadhams, just a great guy. he and I have had some of the most robust, fun debates that our show has had. So I want to welcome him back. Hey, Dick.
Hi, Chuck and Julie.
Hey,
Good to be with you again.
Good to see you. For folks who aren't from Colorado, Dick is a former Republican Party chairperson.
That's right.
In Colorado. So, Dick, I need to...
And he ran lots of campaigns, including John Thune, who we all hate now, and Wayne Allard and Owens and many other ones.
Well, let me ask you, though...
Let's first ask Dick, what are you up to today?
Oh, okay. These days?
Oh, I've got several projects I work on, so...
Are you weighing in at all on the Colorado Republican Party chairperson race?
Not really. I don't have a vote on the committee. Did not seek a vote. Did not run for bonus member. Did not run for a county officer position. And so I don't have a vote. And I'm watching it with interest, but I'm not involved with it at all.
For the record, we have not and are not endorsing right. anybody on that.
Not for none of those reasons. Just we can't find anybody who really matches up perfectly with what our thoughts are. Well, I've watched the chairman one. I guess both ways. Bob was the first chairman I got to know pretty well, and that was back around 2000, 2001, and now we're up to today.
21.
It used to be a volunteer position. I think, Dick, you were the first one to make it a paying position.
Yeah, I was. No, well, actually, there was one back in 1965.
Oh, okay. All right.
That was actually the second one.
But as a practical matter, I don't think there's ever been what one would call a grassroots chairman of the Republican Party. They've never won, ever, since I've been, at least certainly since 2001. And the last one had a chance was a woman you were with, I think, recently. Susan Beckman, I think you were at the Cherry Creek one. And they cheated her out of that by phony proxy votes. So they did.
All right.
There's no question about it. That's what happened. And so, you know, it's hard for Republicans to complain about Democrats when they rig their own chairman race. It's kind of like, huh, well, that's new. But does it bother you at all that maybe the leader is, who is it? Scott Gessler.
Oh, the leader.
And his incredibly close friend is Andy George. And Andy George, Clear Creek Strategies, Josh Penry have dominated the Republican Party. And if you go up against them, they will do anything to you. And I mean anything. They'll bring lawsuits. Poor Ken Buck found out what's to go against the mafia down in El Paso County when they started bringing criminal charges against them, ethics charges. I mean, that's how they play. Does it bother you, the domination of the Republican Party by consulting firms? Even though you're a consultant, you're not a vicious consultant.
And you've actually won some races. Mm-hmm. So there's a plus.
Yeah, that's another plus.
That's another plus.
You know, I don't know who Scott Gessler is close to. I'm not close to Scott Gessler, so I really don't know who he's close to.
You know Andy. You know who Andy George is?
Oh, I know Andy very well, and I know and like Andy. Worked with him on some projects in the past, and he's a good guy. I do. No, he's a friend of mine, and I like him. I don't know, Chuck and Julie. This I know there's a lot of discussion about the power of consultants in the Republican Party, but I also know the candidates and don't have to hire people either. I mean, they're not compelled to hire somebody. So, I mean, no one, when I've worked for Senator Allard or Governor Owens or Senator Brown, or way back when I worked for 9 years for Senator Bill Armstrong in his Senate office, nobody forced them to hire me, David. I guess I have a different view of it.
Well, you do. Well, I'll tell you, if you ran against Mike Kaufman, let's mm-hmm. say you're a naive, good old retired guy who said, I'd like to
Roger
be.
Roger Edwards, right?
Yes, Roger okay. Edwards. Mm-hmm. And what they did to him. The consultants, the Clear Creek Strategies and all the other ones, your friend, Andy George, went after the guy and tried to destroy him and his family and everyone involved. Why is that a good job? Why is that? He had him crying on the floor.
What did they do to him? I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, they go after you. Your phone is thing. You get everybody calling you a racist, a bigot. Mm. They get their armies out against you to the point where the guy was sorry he ever ran. He had no idea. So is that our democracy today, just threats going after people?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with what happened to him. Certainly not something, I mean, I like to play hard in campaigns, but not it's not that kind of behavior I've engaged in, I don't think. I would say this, though, Chuck, that anytime a candidate in either party challenges a longtime incumbent, it's such an uphill battle. And a lot of times I think candidates like that are naive about the challenge they're taking on. And so sometimes they might think it's the process is rigged, when in fact it's just the fact that an incumbent has a strong base of support, and it's hard to beat an incumbent in a primary especially.
That was the problem. That was the problem, because the question was whether he'd make the ballot. And they didn't want anybody making the ballot. And it appeared he was going to make the ballot.
Well,
so they went after him with everything they could.
Let me kind of, speaking of the primaries, because this, I think, is a big thing. Dick, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, that we know, because Ted Tremp, our Democrat strategist friend, who you debate regularly with on Peter Boyle's.
Which, by the way, is great.
Exactly. That is good recommended listening. Mm. But he's openly admitted that what they do now is when they find Republican districts where they realize they can't flip it to a Democrat, what they do is they play in the primary and they support their kind of candidate, pour more money, frankly, into the races than Republicans do.
No, they pour millions into the races.
And so
as a matter of fact,
wait a minute.
You were with three of them in which the millions were poured in just a little while ago. Kirk Meyer, Dan Wong, and Tonya von Berber. And they poured millions to make sure. And why did they pour millions in? Because they didn't want a conservative. They didn't want a grassroots person like Patrick Neville in there. So you wonder.
Well, what is your thought? To me, it seems like that's, if among other reasons, a really good reason for the Colorado Republican Party, whoever the new chairperson is to say, hey, you know what? We're not going to participate. We're not going to do open primaries. We're going to get rid of the open primary. And just if you have to be, you have to be. And I granted you can be a Democrat and lie and register, not lie, but register as Republican. But I think that would be at least a step. Now that we know the Democrats are actively playing in our primaries, trying to influence them, if we could at least, you'd have to at least be a registered Republican to vote in the primary. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure who they are who poured. Are you saying Democrats spent millions?
Catherine Murdoch.
Through Unite America, poured millions of dollars into those races.
I mean, and Ted has flat out said on our show, that's our strategy.
That's a strategy. Poured, I think, $3.5 million into that and one in South Jeffco.
Wasn't aware of that, honestly.
So you're saying you support getting out of open primaries.
Well, remember though, Julie, that was passed by the voters. It would necessitate an initiative to get that on the ballot.
Opt out? I thought there was an opt out.
The state central committee, as I recall, votes with 75%.
But is that? I mean,
convention.
Can I pass a law saying Chuck gets to be A? And you can only replace Chuck with a 99.9% vote. Because it's almost universally found to be unconstitutional and illegal to claim that what you got in by a majority now requires a massive, huge majority. And literally what happened in the U.S. Senate, people said, well, you know, to get rid of the filibuster or anything else would take 2/3 or 60 votes. And they went, no. The underlying committee can vote by a majority to get rid of it. So the state central committee could say, no, this 75% is unconstitutionally illegal. We'll now get out with a majority.
I don't know if you can do that or not. I'm not a campaign finance lawyer.
Would you think it'd be a good idea?
Would it be a good idea?
No.
To be honest, I think it would be a mistake. And in fact, I was engaged in that debate when this came up a few years ago when there was a vote at the state central committee to attempt to get the 75% to opt out of the primary and go to a straight convention for nominations. And I think that would be a mistake, because if we're going to be able to appeal at all to unaffiliated voters who determine elections in this state, and always have, by the way, I frankly am always amused when I hear, and you're not doing this, but I've heard others on radio interviews and other public forums, when they describe the days of of victories by candidates of mine, Owens and Allard and Ben Campbell, that those were the good old days when all you had to do was get out the Republican vote and you won statewide elections. And I'm thinking these are people who were not involved in politics very much, because it's always been hard to win elections in Colorado. In fact, before Allard and Owens and Campbell won five straight elections for governor and senator from 1996 to 2002, there had been 14 elections for governor and senator between 1972 and 1992. And we only won three. And those were the times that Armstrong and Brown were on the ballot. It's always been hard to elect Republicans statewide. We've just done a lousy job, Chuck and Julie, in my opinion, of putting up good candidates. And over the years. And in fact, a speech that I gave a couple of times a week or so ago, I talk about since 2002, and that was the night that Allard and Owens were reelected. There have been 10 elections for governor and senator, and we won one. And that was Cory Gardner when he unseated Udall. Now, were the other nine elections unwinnable? Did we have no chance? No. In fact, I could go election by election. I won't do it, but and I could show you that we lost because we put up bad candidates. I mean, many of them weren't bad people. I mean, I frankly like Bob Beaupre very much, but he ran substanceless campaigns, if that's a word.
And Dan Mays, I'll go with you on Dan Mays.
Dan Mays, yeah. And then Daryl Glenn. Frankly, Walker Stapleton had no chance of winning in last
right.
But who would? I mean, well, let me back you up.
Can you tell me? Because I don't know. What was his agenda to be governor of Colorado?
Chuck kept saying.
What was his opponent's agenda for Colorado? What was the agenda? Now, everyone acknowledges that the governor and Senator Bennett, who's a good personal friend of mine, cannot possibly be beat. Not possibly. Because what? They believe in closing down America. They hate small businesses, killing the unborn. What is it that the Democratic program today is so attractive that you don't believe that we can overcome it unless we find these beautiful
candidates? I think we can be. I think there's potential to beat both of them.
Now, who would you
want? How much would you be willing to bet?
Well, we can go to sportsbet.com.
Let me ask this other question. Do you believe that Colorado's elections are safe, secure, fair, and the gold standard?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You're crazy. You're absolutely insane.
We disagree on that one.
You're absolutely insane. We can't agree to disagree.
We got plenty of time.
I've run mail ballot elections and compared to going to the poll election, and it is 100 degrees different. When they adopted it in 2013, they tried it, and I think 2001, when Rutt Bridges put it on the on a referendum that the Colorado voters turned down. So then they instituted it in the 2013 legislative session, along with all the other rules. Now they didn't quite realize that just mail ballot doesn't get you there. You got a ballot harvest. That's really the key. And so the governor in 2018 put a $23 million ballot harvesting campaign together. Do the Republicans have $23 million to put a ballot harvesting campaign together? And when people go to the polls, you try to get the frequent voters, because it's hard to get people. You got to drive them sometimes and everything else. So you try to go to those who have the most stake in it, or at least they are most interested. And so whatever your campaign is incredibly important. With a mail ballot election, you want to go all those people who could care less.
And here's the unaffiliated
they're only unaffiliated because they were registered at Motor Voter.
They don't know they're registered.
Yeah. And so those voters, which you go to enormous apartment buildings, have you ever gotten a third stage Alzheimer patient to vote?
Me?
Yeah.
Not that I know of.
Yeah. Well, they're voting. Okay. So who gets them? Who gets them? And how do you beat that? How do you beat they pay a manager at a home to get out the vote, make sure they have their voice heard, pay him $5,000, and you throw out all the poll workers. In Adams County, no poll workers were allowed to look at the voting process. The voting process is so rigged in Colorado, so badly rigged. New York Gazette which is not a Republican outlet, said Colorado's voting stinks. It's clearly bad. It's clearly there's something rotten about it. This last election, now Trump isn't less popular in Colorado than he was before. He got within 4 or 5 points, and this time he couldn't come within 15. Trump wasn't any less popular in Nebraska, wasn't less popular in Wyoming, wasn't less popular in Utah. So why is he all of a sudden so unpopular in Colorado? Huh. Maybe it's that third stage Alzheimer patient that's voting for Joe Biden, who did not appear, made no campaign effort, put no advertisements in, did nothing. I mean, was he a good candidate? Is he the kind of candidate the Republicans need to appeal to?
Because Chuck, you're monologuing. But so that's a question.
That's what I'm good at.
How do you then, Dick? Because I mean, I agree with Chuck on that. It's like maybe it's not. I don't know. I say we need to quit saying rigged. We need to quit saying cheated because these are the new rules that we have to play with. How do the Republicans start playing by those same rules? Whatever the candidate is, let's say we get a great candidate. How do we match, for lack of a better way to put it, their ballot harvesting machine?
Yeah, well, I share your concern about ballot harvesting, but I also know this. Republicans in California in four very competitive districts ran really strong candidates. And one of the things that the California Republican Party did is they implemented their own ballot harvesting program.
Right.
And it was very important to those. By the way, those Republican candidates ran several points ahead of Donald Trump. He lost those districts in California that those Republican candidates won. So it wasn't because they were carried in by Donald Trump. So I do think we have an indicator that it is possible to do our own ballot harvesting. I haven't taken that hard a look at what they did. I've just read about it. But I think it's clear that we could do some of the same things. Yeah. Chuck, to your point about Trump being more unpopular, back in 2016, the poll showed that his approval rating was somewhere in the mid 40s in 2016. 2020, he was at 37%. He was much more unpopular in 2020.
But Dick, he got more votes than any other Republican president.
I understand that, Julie. But I'm talking about Colorado right now.
Okay.
And the fact is that we also had in those 4 years, we had an influx of several hundred thousand new voters, largely younger, more liberal, and they hated Donald Trump. And then we also lost a bunch of suburban swing voters who might have stuck with Trump in 2016 because they hated Hillary Clinton, but then they abandoned Trump in 2020. I do not think it was fraud that resulted in a 14-point loss for Trump in Colorado. I think you can conscribe it to political factors that I just went through. I really don't. I do not.
Wait a minute. I mean, you can't tell me that George Brockler was a quote unquote worst candidate.
No, in fact, he because every Republican, those same voters that hated Trump, they looked down the ballot, and if they saw a Republican by a name, they saw Donald Trump, and they voted against him. And I know a lot of Trump loyalists don't want to hear that, but that's the truth, and they don't have to believe this, I think happened.
What's the excuse going to be in 2022 when Trump is no longer running?
I think that's why, frankly, Chuck and Julie, I think that's why we have a shot in 2022.
You have no shot. You have no shot for governor.
All right.
I'll give you 10 to 1 odds. I'll give you 10 to 1 odds.
That's just saying
I'll give you $100 to $1,000 right now.
That's something too, because I think you're right. We all need to have these conversations with all the people, and we all disagree on this, I know, who think that Trump was the main problem, even though Republicans haven't won and have been losing steadily for a while now. But in 2022, we can all go there.
Why is it in the rest of the country that Trump didn't bring anybody down? Why do the Republicans take 30 legislative ones, have the majority of governors, have, in fact, more state legislative seats than they ever had in their history if everybody hates Trump?
Have you taken a look at the races we won that to close the gap in the House of Representatives? We had strong candidates in those races around the country that ran strongly ahead of Trump in those districts.
But they hate him so much. If a great candidate like George Brockler cannot win in Colorado.
In Colorado, it was a different dynamic, Chuck. It just was.
It's rigged.
Okay, so Trump, though, as we all know, let me ask you this. We all know now it's not going anywhere. He's made that clear. I'm going to ask you the Kevin McCarthy, Liz Cheney question, okay? I don't know if you saw the news conference today where some reporter said, do you think Trump should speak at CPAC? And McCarthy just said yes, and Liz Cheney said no, and then they walked off different sides of the stage. What are your thoughts on that?
The two disagree.
You're up on that stage, if you're the third person on the stage,
I think it's fine for Trump to speak to CPAC. I don't have any trouble with that. And that's what I would have said. So I don't have any trouble with that.
How do you, though, in Colorado, since Trump is going to be, he's not going anywhere, right? And he's going to, you've got people lining up now to try to take out Lauren Boebert, who was, I don't think you get a much stronger candidate than her. Clearly people liked her, and I think she did her own share, the good part of ballot harvesting. What do you do in Colorado for governor? Because who would your idea of a good candidate?
The perfect candidate.
Who could beat? Because I agree with you. I think Polis is beatable.
Candidate. I've learned that running campaigns all these years. Okay. But I would say this, that I think we do have a couple of, I don't know if either one of them are going to run, but I think Heidi Ganahl is a very strong candidate. I think George Brockler would be if he decided to run again. I think there are others out there. I don't know who they are, but listen, that's what the nomination process is for.
I was going to say, I agree with you on
Brockler. The nomination process is now determined by Democrats.
But why couldn't he get the money? George dropped out the first time around because there wasn't going to be the money there. So, I agree with you. I think he was a great candidate. It was a great candidate for AG, but couldn't get any money. Why is that? Why do the Republican, the big money people, apparently, don't want to were unwilling to put their money behind a George? Maybe you don't know, unless you're one of the big money people. We're not, but.
Well, I'm not, but I'm not sure what you mean. The big money people wouldn't support George Brockler for governor?
For governor or AG. That's what George flat out says.
He couldn't get Phil Anschutz. He couldn't get any of the Coors money. He couldn't get any of the guy who did the car collection who died recently. All the people who contribute, in your time, small donors still contributed to the Republican Party. That's all dried up. There's no money left. The only money is Democratic money. And so Republican consultants go to people like Ted Trimpa and ask him for money for squish Republicans.
I don't know anything about that.
Well, you don't seem to know a lot about a lot of things. As a big estate consultant, as considered the guru of the state, you can go, I don't know anything about that.
You have lots of theories, but let me tell you, what I do know is this, and this is from years of experience in running campaigns, and Colorado's demographics and numbers have changed, but the fundamentals are still there. You need a candidate who can articulate why they're running for governor or U.S. senator, who will run an aggressive campaign in your face contrast, which we did. Believe me, a lot of Democrats hate my guts. Now, a lot of my Democratic counterparts I have a good relationship with because they respect the fact that I played the game hard, and they do too. But I got to tell you, I've watched candidate after candidate and campaign after campaign embarrass themselves by not being able to have any kind of an articulated agenda, who just get the hell kicked out of them by the Democrats because they don't know how to fight back. I've seen that over and over again. And if you guys were around for both Allard campaigns, Wayne Allard was the ultimate underdog twice in 1996 and 2002. People look back and they see Bill Owens leave office with 70% approval rating. I'll give you some information. Tom Norton led us by 30 points in the primary. Until we beat Tom Norton. We were down to Gail Shetler in the general election in 1998, and then she outspent us 2-1 in the general. We fought back. We had a clear agenda. To be honest, Chuck and Julie, I get frankly tired of the whining by my party about the Democrats do this. It's unfair. The system is crooked. Screw that. I've been through some of the toughest campaigns in America. We took out the most powerful Democrat in America in South Dakota because we had a candidate who wasn't afraid after losing the previous Senate race to get back into it. Nobody had confronted the Tom Daschle campaign before. Let me tell you something about the Daschle campaign. I've never talked about this. This is way before Barack Obama. You know what happened to the Daschle campaign team that we beat in 2004?
What?
His communications director, deputy campaign manager, his chief of staff, and others in the Daschle orbit. You know where they went after Daschle left the Senate? They went to a newly elected senator from Illinois by the name of Barack Obama. Huh. And they were the nucleus for his campaign in the presidential race. I say that because they were the A-team, and we kicked their ass. I'm just tired of all of them whining and moaning and complaining that, oh, we're screwed because this and that, and we're it's not fair. Screw that. I've been in enough tough campaigns that you deal with what's in front of you, and you can win.
So, no, let me finish it.
Well,
no,
you have it.
Yes, you have it. No, we have
no,
to have
Dick,
more time.
He
filibustered us. He filibustered us.
Thank you.
Hey, great. It's great to have you on.
Nice to be with you.
A lot of fun as always.
All right. Thank you, Tom Daschle. Hey, and so we
Tom Daschle.
Thank you, Dick Wadhams. Hey, and Dick Wadhams, he took the time, so now we don't have. Actually, Thomas, let me ask real quick. Do we have time to play my martini video? Because, Leo, we wanted to give the... Okay. So, Leo, this... Everybody pay attention now. We had to cut Chuck off so we could get to the important stuff.
Darn.
And that is on our Friday, Party Friday, we're going to do a Vespers martini. It's a James Bond martini. Take a pen and pencil down. We're going to play it right now. Here's how you make it. Roll tape, Thomas.
One of the most controversial drinks on the planet, the Vesper Martini. I would say James Bond is probably one of the most famous martini drinkers in the world. Well, this is the first martini he makes. This is the first martini he drinks. You'll need gin, vodka, Lillet Blanc, and then we're going to garnish that with a lemon twist. We're going to take a mixing glass and we're going to place in our gin. Then you'll balance that with some vodka. Then we're going to add our Lillet Blanc, something that's very unique to the Vespa Martini. Add ice. Shake it up. Pour into a chilled cocktail glass. And then you want to garnish it with a large, thin lemon slice. Twist those oils over the top of the glass. Wash the rim of the glass with the lemon and then just drop it in. And there it is, the Vespa Martini.
All right,
you Party Friday people. Get your Vesper martinis out. We'll have ours here, and we'll have a good show and a good time.
We'll see you on Party Friday.
Bye-bye, everybody.